In this episode, discover how to use thought sequences to teach your prospects everything they need to know about your product or your service.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery, brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Hey-o, what is up? What is up? You know, there's a really interesting thing happening in video marketing, and it's about the every single week how businesses are starting to see how blatantly obvious it is that when you communicate through video, instead of something that feels like work or homework or feels difficult like text, you get better results. So video is becoming this foregone conclusion. And when I got started years ago, over 10 years ago in video, you really had to convince in order to convert. But now it's becoming obvious. So I'm going to give you some information about how to use thought sequences to teach your prospects everything they need to know in order to convert. That's going to be coming up in a moment. But first, here's the news that matters to video marketing masters. Twitter stock took another big hit on Thursday, but CEO Jack Dorsey doesn't plan to stop juggling two jobs anytime soon. Dorsey, who is also the CEO of mobile payment service Square, was asked during a conference call with analysts about, you know, planning on doing both jobs at the same time. Dorsey is staying in the position of both jobs, and the 40-year-old tech mogul became Twitter's permanent CEO in October of 2015. And since then, the company has faced two rounds of layoffs and a string of executive departures. Now, the big picture here for marketers is with each passing week, it feels like the helium is leaving the Twitter balloon. And if you're wondering how to approach Twitter, I recommend that you continue to have a presence there, right? It's a valuable platform. There's a lot of eyeballs there, but I want you to take your tweets, and instead of manually doing it and being there every day, and I want you to load them into a tool called Meet Edgar, and then allow Edgar to post 3 to 5 of those tweets each day, and then recycle them every 30 days. You know, nobody's going to notice. If you see somebody's going to comment, by all means, reach out and engage. If you're trying to build on that platform, reach out, engage to other people, and start growing an audience. But I really kind of think you should be looking at this as an opportunity to start investing your time and your resources into early emerging platforms. You should always really be focused on planting your flag in a developing platform. And as that platform starts to get overrun by the masses, you're going to be the guru. And if the platform has already generated mainstream adoption, you've missed the biggest percentage growth opportunity. Early adopters become gurus. So unlike showing up to a party when you don't want to show up early and you kind of want to roll into a party and be the cool person making a brief cameo appearance, right? Early adopters and people that get the best advantage on social platforms are the ones that show up first, plant their flags, and get the biggest percentage growth. And I want you to think about using platforms in that way. By the way, this episode, I've got with me Marcus Krieg, our director of strategy. What is up, Marcus?
What is up?
You know, I think it's a really interesting conversation for marketers to be having. Lots of people don't want to show up early. They think that that's an indicator of investing in a platform that might not be ready for prime time. But like an investment strategy, you want to be there early.
Right. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's just like we talked about last week. If you want to get traction on a social media platform, if you want to use a social media network as a growth channel for your business, you need to be there early. Otherwise, you're just another, you know, you're just adding to the noise.
Right.
It's very slow growing unless you have an external traffic source.
If we were advising Twitter, we would be recommending that Twitter do a couple of really smart things. One, develop an algorithm so you're not drinking from the fire hose and seeing every single post that everybody's posting, right?
Right. And I mean, there's a reason why platforms like Instagram and Pinterest have added algorithms.
Facebook.
Right. Facebook's, they've had an algorithm and it's gotten more severe in terms of limiting a post reach. But the reason why that's done is because it helps improve the user experience on the platform. People spend longer on the platform when there's less noise. And so Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, they're trying to push the content that's highest quality. That's the purpose of the algorithm. And so algorithms are not evil, right? A lot of marketers like to think that algorithms are ruining their life. But the fact of the matter is that if you're doing social right and you're getting a good, strong engagement from your fans, then the algorithm benefits you compared to the rest of the market, right? So for the people who use the platforms effectively, algorithms are a benefit. When we look at a situation like Twitter where they haven't made that switch, what they're experiencing is people don't want to live on the platform the way they used to. They go to the platform to complain about companies, to ask customer support questions, to talk to their own audiences, but then there's so little conversation that's happening. It's like we talked about last week. You know, Neil Patel mentioned that his 240,000 Twitter followers are leading to 5 or 6, you know, clicks, and it's like, look, if you're just posting like it's to your audience and you're not having a conversation like you mentioned earlier, then obviously you're not going to get great social engagement.
Twitter feels like Simon and Garfunkel to me. People talking but not listening.
Yep.
And that's the sound of silence. That's actually the sound of trouble coming down the road. And if you want to talk about more trouble, look back at episode 54. It's titled The Smartest Video Marketing Trends of 2017. And you're going to hear me talk about virtual reality and VR 360 that you really aren't going to hear from too many people. And in that episode, we also have Marcus Krieg and Wirebuzz's director of content, Jason Fair, debating out VR and the future of VR. And I think it's a really interesting topic. It feels like everyone is saying that VR is the next big thing in video, except Wirebuzz. You know, we're not really that crazy about VR as a near-term trend. It's a trend down the road. But as VR becomes more available to customers, I'm just not seeing that anything points to becoming more than just a niche fad over the next 15 years. Sure, it's almost like the internet when the internet was born 15 years ago. People had a hard time visualizing how it was going to be what it is today. But VR down the road 15 years from now is going to be huge. We're just not there yet. It's fun. Sure it is. It's interesting. Maybe, you know, but when it comes to the impact on a business, it's just not there unless, of course, you're in the gaming industry. You know, VR has actually become a useful tool in health and the rehabilitation space with patients that have PTSD or even burn victims. But outside of those small niche industries, don't expect VR to take off anytime soon in the video marketing world. And Marcus, we saw this week in the San Jose Mercury News, which is really one of my favorite news outlets, and they confirmed it further when they reported, quote, Facebook wants to transform the way people communicate with virtual reality, but U.S. consumers, they aren't lining up outside of Best Buy stores to try the Oculus Rift headsets, and that's why Facebook is shutting down 200 of its 500 Oculus virtual reality demo stations at Best Buy stores throughout the U.S., and it's common at these stores to go days without giving a single demonstration, and that comes from workers at Best Buy. Now, I see that it's 200 of 500, and when I see that 200 of 500 of these Facebook little Oculus Rift demo stands inside of Best Buys are being shut down, what I really see is they probably could have shut down all 500 at one time, but that's a bigger story. And they would rather, they're too heavily invested long-term to walk away with their tail between their legs. They'll take their poison more on a later day.
Too many big egos saying that VR is the next latest, greatest thing, that they just don't want to bruise themselves.
Yeah. Hey, I just realized you weren't with me, but one of our, prospect reached out to us. They knew what we were doing in the video space. They asked us to come down to their office. They have created a virtual reality, a city the size of Manhattan, not Manhattan Beach, California, where I grew up, but Manhattan, New York, where it's got huge buildings and they're actually building out store space for like CVS to have a virtual store, and they're renting out apartments for people to live virtually above these stores in this like New York community. And we went through it, Strons Vanderplug and David Flores and I went down there. And when I left, I was like, that guy's either a genius or he's living in another world that we don't live in yet. And I just don't see you going home right now. You know, maybe in 10 years, but I don't see you going home right now, putting on an Oculus Rift and then checking out from reality for the, you know, next 6 hours.
Fun fact, my, you know, my,
this better be fun.
Fun fact, my wife actually has a Oculus Rift. We used it the day that it came. It came with her Galaxy phone. And we used it literally once. It made me nauseous. And we neither of us ever used it again.
Right.
It's sitting in the cupboard underneath our television, never to be seen or heard from again.
And that's a really big problem. They say pioneers get slaughtered. And it looks like that's happening right now with the Oculus Rift at Best Buy's.
Well, yeah. And I mean, this happens in so many new industries when new technology or new information comes out, where we fixate on the early adopters, and the early adopters are so enthusiastic. And when we see that enthusiasm, we assume that the rest of the market is going to respond similarly. We see this in the healthcare space all the time.
All the time.
When a client will, they'll have the latest, greatest science, and then the early adopters, the KOLs, love that, but then they can't get adoption with the ordinary average doctor around the country,
right?
Because they're talking over their heads.
Right.
Right.
But adoption is always the hardest pillar, you know, inside of the plan. But most people don't spend enough time talking about adoption.
Right. And recognizing that your early adopters are going to be oftentimes be different people with different needs and goals than your, you know, standard early adopter is. And right now in the tech space and, you know, the gaming space, we have the early adopters and they think it's the best thing since sliced bread, but it's like watching an indie film. You go, you watch an indie film, an arts film that does well at the arts festivals, yeah, but never goes mainstream. You go to Rotten Tomatoes and it always has really great results, like great reviews.
Yeah.
But then an ordinary person who never would have seen that video, that movie in the first place,
yeah,
they watch it and they hate it.
Okay, now what makes us different and why the Wirebuzz team hasn't been drinking the VR Kool-Aid right now is our focus isn't on cool new tech, but our focus is on ROI.
Right, effectiveness.
Effectiveness.
Absolutely.
Interesting. So interesting. Hey, if you want any of these news stories that we just went over, you can go to wirebuzz.com/62. That is the show notes page for this episode. An easy way to remember 62. Well, Sigmund Freud had an irrational fear of the number, you guessed it, 62. Wirebuzz.com/62. As we mentioned a number of times on this podcast, you know, most businesses have a lot of information to share with their prospects before they'll feel comfortable about making a buying decision. But in the ADD world that we all live in, holding your prospects' attention long enough to deliver all that information at once is really challenging. So to join me, Marcus is here. As I mentioned before, he's our director of strategy. And we're going to discuss this critical concept, right, of how you keep people's attention long enough to deliver all of your vital information so they're ready to convert when you need them to. What up?
What's up?
All right, Marcus, let's talk about the thought sequence and how we use it. And let's talk about how you use a thought sequence to educate prospects. And maybe I should start off by saying, what's wrong with the traditional sales process? Let's start with that, and then we'll kind of go into the next phase on this question. So let's start off. What's wrong with the traditional sales process as we've identified it as digital marketers that are interested in creating ROI?
Yeah, this is a really important question. And in particular, I think a lot of more traditional, older businesses that have been around the block for a while are having a really difficult time translating to this new age of technology. I know you and I have had a lot of conversations on this topic, but there's this idea that people don't want to talk on the phone. They don't want to schedule long sales demos. They don't want you to come around to their house and sell something to them. And yet those hour-long, multi-hour-long meetings, that's the traditional way that we educate our prospects and pull them all the way through the sales process in one fell swoop. And sales teams are still trying to do that today. Other marketing and sales combination organizations are starting to get wise to this and realizing that, hey, fewer people are raising their hand for our free consultations. They don't want to just get on the phone with a salesperson. They don't want to sit through an hour-long demo to find out that your product costs $1,000 a month. They just want to know that and then get most of the way through the buying process.
Because now they have access. They have access to Google. They will Google your website. They will Google competitors. They'll start the vetting process. We're in this era of where we've all become expert vetters that can analyze companies and see if they're ready for prime time. And if they don't have the relevant information, they're not going to pick up the phone and talk to a prospect. They're going to bounce and go somewhere else that has that information.
Yeah, absolutely. HubSpot came out with some really interesting data about this.
Thank you. I was going to bring this up.
So 19% of prospects will only want to talk to a salesperson once they reach the consideration stage of the buying process. Now, if you're not familiar with the three-stage buying journey that HubSpot talks about, it starts with awareness, where people become aware of the problem that they have. And then once they become aware of the problem and start researching solutions, they're in the consideration stage, right? They're considering the options that are ahead of them to solve the painful problem or to get the desired benefit. And then once they have narrowed the field of options, of potential solutions, then they're in the decision stage. And that's where it's all about overcoming buying resistance, right? Pricing, implementation, convincing your boss. So that kind of, you know, like tactical content that people need in order to actually make that final purchase. So 19% of people want to get past the entire vetting process before they'll be willing to speak to a salesperson. And another 40% would rather go through the entire sales process without ever speaking to a salesperson, ever.
It's mind-boggling for people that have spent their career in a more traditional sales organization, right? But the times they are changing. HubSpot mentioned that these people or prospects are going to look at 5 pieces of content before they ever pick up a phone and talk to a salesperson. By the way, salespeople still and always will be a buyer's least favorite person unless that salesperson is providing unique value and is consultative. Right.
And I think we'll definitely get into some of the different types of sales organizations and when it makes sense. And I definitely want to get there.
Let's do that.
But before we move on, I think one of the important things to hit here is that as the access to information, as the internet has taken over the buying process for many situations, buyers want to get all of the facts themselves. They want to self-serve. They want to rabbit hole and come away with the solution and then only speak to a salesperson when they absolutely have to in order to make the purchase. And if you are not providing that the information that they need on your website, they're going to either get that information from third-party sources or they're going to ignore your brand entirely and go with someone who will allow them to learn about their product, learn about their pricing. Transparency, right? The power dynamic in the sales and buying process have shifted from the salesperson having all the information to the buyers having access to all the information, or at least feeling like they have access, and then being repelled by companies that don't provide the same level of transparency.
It's really interesting, isn't it? The times they are changing and how your business adjusts to the changing customer is going to ultimately determine how fast you convert and what your ROI is going to be. So, you know, the way businesses sell and the amount of information we need to share is pretty much the same, but that's not the way people want to buy. How can marketers and salespeople work together to bridge that gap?
Well, we've actually sort of embedded that dynamic into everything we do here at Wirebuzz. One of the very first questions we'll ask any client is, how does your best salesperson lead a prospect through the buying process? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the sequence of operations? Like, how do they deliver that information? How do they structure their proposals? Because your best salesperson is onto something. There's a reason why they're effective. And so if we're going to take that information, right, that harpoon content, that one-time demo, and we're going to break it up into bite-sized chunks, we still have that proper sequence that the salesperson walks people through, and we still have to communicate that information, right? And so what we do is we first reverse engineer what the salesperson does, and then we use content to replicate your very best salesperson. Mm-hmm.
and not just any content, the content type that's going to get you the fastest and best results. And that's how this bridges the gap between being a conversation about sales or marketing and how it becomes valuable to people that are interested in video as a content type that generates ROI.
Right. And that has a lot to do. I mean, you have this specific sequence, right? And we have technology now to track which of your prospects have consumed which pieces of content. And it's even more powerful when you use video because there's extra data. And so you have the ability to use your website, your advertising, your social media, your email automation system, your SMS text message campaigns, like you name it, you can deliver that same content that your salesperson does in bite-sized pieces and pull people through the process. And if you use video, you're going to get their attention sooner, you're going to hold it for longer, and then that's going to pull people through that information journey, that thought sequence, faster.
All right, now that makes good sense to me. And I'm always recommending, you know, who's your best salesperson? Who's already optimized the sales process, right? But what if your best salesman really isn't that good? They might be your best salesperson, but they may not be the best salesperson. What do you do in that situation?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It comes up a lot with new organizations. We've worked with a lot of startups in the past that are building out their sales team or they're launching a new product and they haven't figured out how to sell it. They haven't validated it yet.
Right.
And they're coming to us because they need help selling, right? They need us to develop the messaging and then create assets that their sales team can use almost like training wheels, right? And so in those situations, we're still going to use thought sequences, but we may not have one that it has been iterated and tested over several years from like your best salesperson. But we do have something almost as good, which is proven copywriting frameworks. There have, for over 100 years, copywriters have broken down and streamlined the process of persuasion. And there are lots of different frameworks that you would use in different types of situations, right? So let's say that you have a large amount of contrast between the problem that your prospect might be feeling, right? And then the benefit they get from your solution. Right. In that situation, we love to use before after bridge. You describe how they feel today, right? You build demand for a solution, right? You make that solution a priority because that we prioritize things based on how they make us feel, which is why we start with the problem. Then we contrast that with the after, right? The vision of the future once the pain is gone, once you've achieved the benefits.
Ta-da!
Right, exactly. And because the contrast is severe in the way that our brains are wired, that creates a very strong emotion. And that strong emotion helps people prioritize where they're going to invest their intention.
And that's the fallback plan.
Right.
If a company doesn't already have somebody that has optimized the process, right?
Right.
Almost every company has somebody that's kind of been like the guru of the sales process that's the closer.
Mm-hmm.
You like that term?
Yeah.
They're the closer.
Yeah. And so there are other copywriting frameworks. You would use them in different situations. But the idea is that you need to understand the situations, which copywriting framework really is going to be the most effective for the pain and the benefit, right? You use that copywriting framework, and then you structure the information you know your prospects need based on where it fits into the framework.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, clear, but just paint by numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the great things about copywriting. That's why all of our script writers are copywriters, is because when a client comes to us and they don't know what the right messaging is, we can do that for them based on proven 100-year-old best practices.
So you bake the 100-year-old best practice as like a recipe into the script for the video so you can convince and convert off of this historical discovery of this certain framework.
Right. And it's not just necessarily one video.
Right.
Right. Now, if we're creating, for example, an explainer video, we might try to take people through that entire journey in 2 minutes, but obviously you're not getting very deep. But all of that 2 minutes of information is just a tiny fraction of what that entire information journey, that entire thought sequence looks like. Over the course of that whole thought sequence, we also need to be thinking about taking people from a state of understanding that they have a problem and demanding a solution, that solution being a priority, moving them through to understanding what types of opportunities are out there for solving it, owning that conversation, and then later introducing them to your product and why it's the best, right? And so we use the same framework both on a micro scale in terms of each piece of content, but also on the macro scale across multiple pieces of content so that you're pulling people through the entire buyer's journey.
Marcus, I know a lot of times, you know, we bring this up, but where should marketers and salespeople focus first? I mean, it's obviously a lot of content to create. So how do you know how to prioritize where to get started?
Sure. Yeah. And you're right. We talk about this all the time because
it's important.
It's super important. And the issue here is we want to generate return on investment as quickly as possible so that you can reinvest what you're earning back into creating more content and amplifying your sales process.
Do you agree or disagree that we used to go from the starting point in a sales funnel or a buyer's journey, but then when we did our own, we realized that what we really needed was to start from the back of the funnel and work up. And once we did that, we saw the flow started happening quicker, and that changed our philosophy.
Absolutely. And it really makes a lot of sense if you actually give it a moment's thought. We think linearly. We want to start at the beginning of the journey. We want to drive traffic, and then we figure out how to generate leads, and then we want to figure out how we can close those deals. But if you start at the top, all of that traffic, all of those leads you might be generating are not actually going to turn into customers because you haven't created the rest of the content, the rest of that thought sequence. Now, on the other end of the other side of the coin, if you are already a viable business, you already have a sales process, you already have a way that you're attracting prospects, maybe your sales team is hand-choosing prospects. That's fine too. But if you start at the back of the process, the very, very end of the sales funnel, overcoming buying resistance, what are the things that your prospects are saying that's preventing the sale? What are the questions? What are the objections? Pricing transparency, comparisons between your product and others.
I want to stop you for a second. And I know you're on a good flow, but when you're talking about common objections, that cannot be answered by the marketing team, right?
Usually not. Yeah.
Usually not.
Yeah.
Because the common objections come so late that the marketing team's usually not there. And it's probably the best salesperson that has been hitting home runs. Whenever that question gets teed up to them, that's the person that should be involved in the conversation about what assets they need based on what questions or objections they commonly get.
Well, and I think what's brilliant about that sort of connection is that it ties directly into where the direction I was heading with this, which is your marketers tend to be fixated and focused on traffic and leads, right? Because that's what the sales team keeps asking them for. Sales teams hate trying to cold call. They hate trying to break down gatekeepers, right? And so they ask the marketing team, generate good quality leads. And then the marketing team goes out and they create this top of funnel content, but that content doesn't translate into sales. And what does the sales team say?
This isn't working.
The leads suck.
Yeah.
The leads suck. And the reason is that we have not completed the thought sequence. The traffic that you're generating, the leads that you're generating are not advancing far enough through the buying process for a salesperson to feel like it's easy. However, if you create content for the back of the funnel where resistance is causing certain deals to literally fall out of your pipeline, you have a leaky sales funnel, and you start by creating that content, your sales team will feel the impact immediately.
Right. And then they'll be on board.
Right.
I also look at it like I'm going to handle all objections when they come up. And I'm going to do it in person. I'm going to do it over the phone. If it comes up in an email, I'm going to address it. But how do I reinforce that objection? Or how do I take my response and turbocharge it, right? Make it more effective. And what I do is I answer it if I'm in person. Let's just use the in-person example. Answer it in person. Next time I get back to my laptop, I'm like, John, it was great meeting with you earlier today. Oh, here's a quick video with somebody on our team that's answering that same question that you asked earlier. I hope this gives you greater information or greater detail. And what I discover is when you do that, now you've reinforced that answer. You've made it more valid because your salesperson isn't BSing their way, right? There's actually other people on the team that are validating it. That flows.
You're absolutely right. And one of the things that we love doing, just to take that one step further, is we use HubSpot for sales. And we can see that when we send those videos out as a sort of reinforcement to the message that we delivered in person or over the phone, that it gets shared around. We see the ping when that email gets opened and clicked on, and we know that that video is spreading further than just that first person you sent it to. And that's because in just about every business, you have between 4 and 5 stakeholders that are affecting the purchase decision. And as a salesperson or a marketer, you probably aren't talking to all 4 or 5 of them.
You know, it reminds me, and the reason I laughed a few moments ago is this reminds me of when we created a thank you testimonial video for HubSpot.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because our first, to give you a little backstory, our first HubSpot campaign during the 30-day free trial generated $350,000 in new revenue for the company. So I was like, damn, I should probably create a thank you video because it was that good. So we sent them a thank you video. And then once we sent it to them, we watched on HubSpot as everybody in HubSpot started opening up our video. We were basically out HubSpotting HubSpot, and we were getting flyouts all day long as our video was going up the HubSpot food chain until it got to the CEO. It was a funny thing to watch.
It was getting faster views than any video I think we've ever created. It looked like it was about to go viral, but it was going viral within one organization.
Within one company, yeah. Right? With their tools, yeah, to monitor who was watching. By the way, our boy Marcus right here was a recent speaker at a HubSpot event where, you're going to do more justice to the title. Why don't you just tell people what the title is and give just a little information on
it? Sure. The topic was how to rank on the first page of Google in 2017. And the big idea there was just that everything's getting more competitive. It's the same kind of conversation we have here on the podcast about algorithms and the fact that quality beats everything. You create inimitable content, right, that deserves to stand the test of time.
Quality relationship beats a new relationship that doesn't have much value around it. Right?
Yep. And so you always do quality in all things. You do it right the first time. You get the rankings by promoting your content, which is basically what we just talked about in the last episode, episode 61. We talked about the same promotion strategy you would use for a video or a blog post if you want to get it on the first page, if you want to drive that landslide social traffic. And fundamentally, content is content. You promote it the same way. Algorithms fundamentally work the same way. They're, little different doodads from one to the next, but the idea is the same. You create something great, you promote it so that people see it, and then it stands the test of time because it's good enough to deserve that.
All right, well, let's take just a moment. You just brought up content, and I know that there's a lot of people listening that maybe they don't know what the next step is. So let's just assume that you have all the content ready to go, right? You now have it in the can. What do you actually do with it?
Yeah, that's a super smart question because I know that we've had experiences in the past. I know that we've worked with clients who've had all these videos, all this content. Right. We have relationships with really large enterprise organizations that aren't clients, but we know them and we work with them in a collaboration type setting. And almost every case, the videos are not being effectively utilized. What we're talking about today is thought sequences, right? That means that there's a certain order of operations to the content. You want people to watch your explainer video to be interested. And then you want them to watch something that is going to build up demand and really agitate the problem that they're experiencing. In many cases, that's one of the big missing links. Clients like to talk about their product and how their product can help you. But what they tend to forget is you probably already have a similar adopted solution. And they need to not talk about the problem that you would have if you didn't have a solution at all, but what's wrong with your adopted solution, right? So there's all of these different types of messages you need to pull people through, and you need to use your website hierarchy. You're going to use email autoresponder sequences or sales funnels. You're going to incorporate those into your sales team's email templates like we were just talking about. And then you're going to create advertising and retargeting funnels, right? And so the goal is you set up tracking. You want to see which content the people in your database have been consuming, ideally video, but any content really. You want to track it. You want to make sure that it's getting consumed. And then you want to surface the next logical video or piece of content in that journey. And so from a website user experience perspective, and I think this is perhaps the most critical of these because everything else is just a way of amplifying what your website already does. You're just bringing people back into your ecosystem to the right page of your website. But it all starts with your website design. And you need to make sure that that as you start at the top left of your page, if you're in an English-speaking country, that everything flows from one idea to the next, almost as if they were reading your best salesperson's pitch and going through all of that information in the proper order so that objections are handled the moment they arise and there are no gaps in their knowledge.
So left to right. Of course, though, if they read Hebrew, right to left.
Absolutely. Different languages have different contexts, for right. Sure.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that. All right, and we know that these tools, when leveraged properly, get used by sales teams to convince and convert at faster rates. So, okay, so we know that you need to clone your best salesperson using content and effectively sequencing, but where does video fit into this equation? You know, and also while you're there, why is it important for the process?
It's a really good question because, you know, content is content.
Right.
At the end of the day, there's information that needs to be delivered in a certain order. Now, if you were to take your best salesperson and just turn that into copy, you create a long form sales page, but how many people are actually going to get through your long form sales page?
Very few.
Very few. But those ones are buyers, right? Okay. So, but if you want to increase the uptake, you chop up that information, you use videos. Right? And that way you don't have these massive walls of text all over your website. Because at the end of the day, you have to provide that information. And so if you're not going to create these massive walls of text that increase the perceived difficulty of interacting and learning about your product or service, then you're going to have to use another media format. Audio is not conducive to a website sales experience. It's great for content. It's great for education and building community.
Right.
Doesn't solve that problem. So that leaves you with graphics, right? And graphics can tell a very powerful story. If you have an opportunity to deliver a message using a quick graphic that people can consume immediately, do that. If you have a longer story to tell at a particular spot in the sequence, you have to use a video.
The problem that I have with graphics on a page is, as we already know, when somebody is going through and reading a page, they're really not reading it. They're skimming and skipping, mm-hmm. right? And when you have a graphics, say, three paragraphs down, they skim and they just skip to the graphics and then they look at the graphics and like, I don't even understand this. This doesn't even make sense. And then they bounce because they're irritated.
I think that it comes down to, does the graphic actually do the job, right? If you have to explain the graphic is not doing the job.
Right.
Right. So, but if you can communicate a critical idea using simply a graphic, classic example here, product comparisons.
Right.
Right.
That's great.
Those are perfect.
I'm a big fan of those.
Right. And so you use a graphic when they make sense in context. You use graphics to enhance the design and the eye pathing, right? Because eye pathing is a big part of thought sequences and user experience. You want to make sure people consume the messages in the right order. But you simply will not have good results from your website as in terms of turning it into a sales machine, in terms of being able to have access to all of the advanced
right.
marketing technology, you know, the email autoresponders, the sales funnels, retargeting funnels. You have to have that content on your web page, and it has to be in a format that people are willing to consume. And what that comes down to is, yes, the hyper-motivated people will read a wall of text, but only the hyper-motivated people. Everyone else is going to look at that wall of text and say, gee, that looks really hard. I'm going to go somewhere else.
I don't want to work that hard to learn about their service to find out if it's right for me.
Right. You got to make it easy. And a lot of, and again, this is just one of those things a lot of companies think because they're drinking their own Kool-Aid that their product is as important to their customers as it is to them.
But it isn't.
And it's not. And it's not even in many cases a priority.
Right.
And so the only way that you're going to maximize the effectiveness of your marketing is if you make it easy to consume. right? Because the higher the difficulty slider goes up, the more people you're excluding from your content.
And maybe a lot of people don't realize that video has superpowers, right? And the way that people get attracted to it, the information. Let's talk briefly, high level, about the four superpowers and why marketers and business owners need to understand it in order to boost ROI.
Sure. And just to sort of spit them all out at the top, those four superpowers are attention, emotion, clarity, and high perceived value. So let's unpack those just a little bit. Attention, right? This is that perceived difficulty thing, right? Reading feels like work. We are taught in school that reading is work. And then when we are in work, at work, or at play, we don't want to read unless we're one of the weirdos, right? And there are all sorts of people out there who love to read, but there's a reason why TV killed the radio and killed books. And it's because we would rather sit back and passively absorb the information. And so videos have been shown to get four times more attention than an equivalent piece of text-based content. So if you want to increase the rate of consumption of your marketing material, of your sales message, you're going to use video to get the best attention. And then there's emotion, right? We talked earlier about how you have to use emotion to make something a priority. If people aren't feeling the pain of their status quo of their life today, and you can't make them really feel that, then solving that problem is not going to be a priority to them, and you will have a hard time tracking them down from a sales perspective. Mm-hmm. This is one of the biggest reasons why sales stall out. Yes, you know that this prospect needs your solution, but it's not a priority to them. And that means you did not create enough pain or create a big enough picture of a better world once they have your solution.
Yeah, it's kind of like Steve Jobs saying to his team, it's not our customers' jobs to know what they want, right? We have to create that emotion for them in order for them to get there. Now, there's clarity that you get. That's one of the four superpowers.
Right, and clarity is sort of infused throughout this entire message we've had. When you're using a video, you can communicate information in a very precise order. And because people can't skim videos effectively, you are able to deliver all of the information in a very, very clinically precise fashion. And then you're able to quickly and immediately handle objections as they arise in context.
That's what we mean by a videos on railroad tracks,
right?
You bring people to each of the stations.
Yes, absolutely. And then you also are able to enhance clarity when you can see passion on the person who's speaking, when you are able to see iconography, and when text is reinforcing what people are hearing. All of those things enhance clarity if you can show instead of telling, right? Software is a classic example here, where you can demonstrate what your product does. When that show, don't tell methodology works really well with video. It's very hard to do with images, and it's even that much harder to do with text alone. So videos make your content clearer and easier to understand.
Okay, that's clarity. That's the third one. The fourth superpower, as we all know, is perceived value, right? Let's talk about perceived value.
So with perceived value, it's really about shareability, adoption, right? So that goes back to what we were talking about when we created the testimonial for HubSpot.
Right.
If we'd just written a brief text-based testimonial, it would not have spread very far through that organization because the perceived value was much lower.
Absolutely.
But when you make a great video and you share that same piece of content, that same information using a video format, suddenly it gets spread throughout the organization. And the way that I always explain this to other marketers is, well, how often does your CEO read your blog posts?
Never.
Right. And they're like, oh, no one ever cares. I'm doing all this work and no one cares. But I guarantee you, you make a good video, everyone at your organization wants to see it.
Absolutely. Look, I'm a perfect case study here. I know that our writers do a bang-up job. You know how I know that? Because you told me. But when I was on an airplane between Amsterdam and L.A., I had enough time to go through and start reading. I was like, damn, these are really smart blogs. And this is great information. First thing I did when I came back into the office, I pulled each one of those writers aside and I was like, that was awesome. I'm inspired to work with you. But I would have never read it because video has a higher perceived value and reading it feels like work. It's kind of slow. I don't even know if I need to work that hard during the day. And, but I was grateful and I didn't have enough bandwidth to watch a video on that airplane. And I would have watched a video if bandwidth was more plentiful.
Right. And really that's just sort of to strike it home. I think that if you create more videos, your organization will perceive your organization, your marketing team, as adding more value to the company.
Absolutely, right? Okay, so let's take a few moments for the audience. Let's talk about the biggest gaps that businesses have when it comes to sales content. Base this on your experience, okay?
Sure.
What are the biggest gaps that businesses have?
So demand gen's probably, let's say demand gen and pricing, okay? So most organizations try to keep their pricing close to the chest. I know that I was looking at a technology solution not very long ago, and I had to get on a 45-minute demo in order to discover that their product was literally 10 times more expensive than their shoulder competitor.
Fail.
And so obviously I got all the way through that process. They weren't going to close me because I knew their competitor right. did 95% of what they offered at literally 1/10 the price.
Right.
And so
no wonder they hit it.
Right. And that we've all had that experience, which is why the number one cited word when someone goes to a website without a pricing page is frustration.
Right.
They hit the back button. They're going to go somewhere where someone is being transparent about pricing. And so pricing, if nothing else, transparency around your pricing model is super critical. I know that Wirebuzz, as an organization, has had our own issues with pricing in the past. We're in the process of solving that ourselves because we know that it's important content.
And the reason for audience appreciation that we've had a hard time with pricing is because everything we do here is custom. And it's like asking somebody and putting on a pricing page, what does a wedding cost? And, you know, a wedding, you can go down to a court like you and your lovely bride did, or you could go to a golf country club and have your in-laws pay for it like I did. It's a big difference, right?
Absolutely. But what, and this is a great example, what we came around to is this notion that we don't have to say what the prices of everything are. That's not possible. But what we can do is tell you what factors do affect pricing so that we can work with your budget and still create an effective video. And so
it's really disarming too.
Right. It's just about being transparent. People want to know roughly what to expect.
Right.
And so pricing is one of those things that salespeople have held super close to the chest. Marketers need to bring them around to the fact that they are losing a high volume of leads simply by not having transparency. Demand gen, we talked about this just briefly, but sales organizations tend to be very tactical, right? Marketers tend to be very tactical. And when you remove those tactics from the larger persuasion strategy, certain things get missed. And this demand gen notion is one of those things. And it's about making your solution important and a priority to your prospects, really focusing on the pain. We were working with a client recently and their sales team, and their sales team was creating all of their content, all of their emails, all of their pitches based on an assumption that the person that they were communicating with, that their prospect, didn't work with a competitor already. This particular client, they were communicating to their prospects under the assumption, which they knew wasn't true.
Right.
They already knew this wasn't true. They knew that all of their target customers, their prospects, were working with a competitor already.
Hey, can I venture a guess why they did it?
Sure.
Even though they knew it wasn't true, because the closer you get to a product or a service, the more intimate knowledge you have, the harder it is for you to see the obvious. And that's one of those reasons why I think companies really need, even when we're doing it, it's hard for us to do it for ourselves. And it's so much easier and takes less time when you have somebody come in with that doesn't have the same emotional attachments.
Right. And I think that when you're part of the in culture at an organization, you understand why you're adding unique value.
Okay.
Okay. So you think about your benefits, the benefits and the features that you can offer your customers. The problem is that your benefits might be roughly equivalent to your competitors, or at least it's something they will also say is true,
right?
We provide the best service. We provide the highest quality. We have the best technology in XYZ ways. They all say the same stuff, and so it just becomes noise to your target customer. And if you're asking someone to switch, for example, from your competitor to your service, then it's not about your benefits because they think they already have them. Instead, it's about introducing them to the new pain they have, the problems with their current solution, and then presenting your product. And with the sales training we were talking about, we simply asked a question at the very, we just added a question to everything they did. And the question simply identified the unifying pain that every single one of their target customers had with every solution out there on the market,
yep,
aside from their own. So they were able to create contrast with a one quick sentence added to their copy. And
that's unifying.
Right. And so it's very easy to overlook the importance of demand generation, but it's usually one of the first places we start when we're working with the traditional sales organization or account-based marketers. And that's because this is how you get people interested enough to be willing to speak to your sales team and make your product or service a priority.
All right. So then I think there's also like objection handles that we discussed earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you need to position objection handle videos or objection handle content in the context of something else in the thought sequence, right? So when we were talking about these thought sequences, you handle the objection immediately after it arises. Otherwise, it lingers and becomes resistance.
And the buyer stalls out on that objection if it's not handled properly.
Right. So you make sure that the objections are handled in the place where they logically arise in the thought sequence. In some cases, you might even create specific objection handle videos. We usually don't call them that. We position them to do that, but to add value in some other way.
Okay.
We do this all the time. It's one of the staples for clients at when you're starting at the back of the buying process.
I love them.
Yeah, they're super handy, especially because those are the videos that get shared internally with other stakeholders.
And you mean it turns into like essential training material too, because maybe a C-level... when I say C-level, I don't mean like CEO. I mean like a grade. A C-level salesperson can watch the objection handle from an A-level salesperson. And before you know it, you've elevated the entire understanding of the organization. Now you've optimized.
That's exactly how I learned objection handling when I was selling life insurance.
Really?
Back in the day, right? We had a video with our very best salesperson teaching the objection handle while talking to a potential like fictional client.
You watched it and you're like, okay, now I understand the road, the path I have, right, to take, but I think I can actually do it better. And then you make it your own.
Right. And that was also when I was learning copywriting and kind of started nerding out on the whole thing.
Nerd.
I know. Okay. So then the last type of sales content that's overlooked is product comparisons, right? Now, you need to understand that your product is not always going to be right for every potential customer. And you don't want the wrong customers as part of your customer base anyway. So simply be honest about your product or service, where you fit into the market, who your target customer is, and zero in on that. Classic example here, there are two email service providers that are going head-to-head right now. There's ConvertKit and there's Drip. Drip is owned by LeadPages,
yeah,
right? And they're trying to create an all-in-one email marketing solution for everyone. And the reason, and their tool is actually better than ConvertKit by a reasonable amount of features. It's slightly more complicated as a result, but it's got more functionality. But then you have ConvertKit, owned by, you know, Nathan Barry, who used to just be sort of a content educator type, and he created an email marketing platform simply targeting professional bloggers.
Okay.
Okay. Which one of them's growing faster?
ConvertKit.
By an astronomical,
absolutely,
percentage. 60 times faster than Drip. And Drip has more potential target customers. Tell your customers who the right customer is and let all of the people who aren't your best customer go, because they're not going to help your brand reputation anyway. If you have an unsatisfied customer, that does more damage to your company than the revenue you're generating.
Hey, does this go back to the conversation we had earlier with your mom about firing your best customer?
In some cases, you got to, right, fire your best customers.
But that's very similar. I mean, knowing who your right customer is just as important.
Absolutely. And And when it comes to sales content, you need to either be the person who tells your customers how you fit into the market and who your best customer is and what the other options are and be honest about that, or they're going to get that information from someone else and you will not be in control of that conversation.
Absolutely. All right, before we wrap up and we call this a podcast, can we talk about the different types of sales organizations and how this concept of creating thought sequencing fits into each of them? Now, this may be a little cumbersome for people, but I really want people to pay attention to this because then you're going to be able to look at your own business and identify it from one of these that Marcus is going to detail. You cool with it?
Sure.
You cool with it?
Yeah, I'm cool with it. So there are basically, you could categorize all types of businesses into four types of sales organizations. There's the pure inbound organizations, like the Mozes of the world, where they don't have salespeople at all. Everything is comes through their business passively. Then there's hybrid models where you have an inbound method that is attracting and converting leads, pulling them through the buying process up to a point, and then it's handed off to a salesperson.
That's like HubSpot.
That would be like HubSpot. Yep, they're a great example of that. Then we have account-based marketing. And this is actually a slightly more traditional model where you have a smaller pool of target customers. Okay. And that means that you have to work those customers very, very hard. Otherwise, because inbound doesn't work. It's not a scalable solution because you only have, say, 10,000 customers in the whole world.
I would identify us in that category.
I think that we would be in that category for now.
Account-based marketing for now.
For now. Right? Until all of the rest of the marketers in the world continue to adopt video.
All right.
Which we're already starting to see that transition at some level, right? We're starting to become more of a hybrid business as marketers continue to come to us asking for proposals.
Absolutely.
So as our industry matures, we'll end up naturally moving more towards a hybrid approach. But the thing is, because we're consultative, because we need to create custom solutions, because we need to solve specific problems that different types of businesses have different types of problems, we're never going to be a pure inbound organization.
Absolutely.
We will always have to have a sales team. And then there's also the cold sales approach. Now, this is the very traditional old school sales model where you have, you know, sales development representatives, cold calling prospects, scheduling meetings for their closers to come in and knock down the demo and attract customers.
Wildly inefficient.
It's wildly inefficient. It's crazy expensive. The employee turnover is extreme. And usually these organizations don't really put any stock in marketing or content creation at all. And they just do the smile and dial thing. So for that model to work, so if that is your business model, then that means that you should probably start transitioning to hybrid immediately to squeeze out efficiencies. Account-based marketing isn't a viable option for that type of business, because if it were, you'd have to have done that automatically, because if you only have 10,000 customers, you can't be cold calling all 10,000 all the time because you're just burning leads.
Right.
So cold sales is bad. The other three are good. And it's just about figuring out how you can start at the back of that process and start creating content that's going to solve specific problems for your sales team at each step of the buying journey. So what it really comes down to, and you know, we're marketers, right? You know, here at Wirebuzz, we're marketers. We understand that selling, that the sales organization is what drives the business. And so we're not trying to step on marketers' toes when we say, the sales team takes the lead here. Your job as a marketer is to enable your sales team to close more deals. So you simplify their process. You try to take as much of the front end of the buying process as possible and front load that on your website. You use all of your various marketing tactics in order to sort of sequence and deliver that content to the right person at the right time. And then when it's appropriate for the salesperson to pick up the baton and run with it, they're ready and able to do so.
Because they not only can answer the questions, but they got the assets to help reinforce the answers.
And because they were a partner in creating that content from the beginning, they will understand what the customer already knows about them by the time they matriculate as a sales qualified lead.
Marcus, we've never had this conversation, but I think we've both seen the look on clients' eyes when we're talking to the marketing team and we say, by the way, the common objection questions, those are the ones that need to be answered by your sales teams. And then there's a look that comes over to the marketing like, we don't want to include them. Like on some of those companies, there's a definite barrier between marketing and sales. And I actually think they're like frenemies.
Yeah.
Right? They're not rowing their boats in the same direction for the same purpose.
Right. The marketers think that their sales team just can't close the leads. The sales team thinks that the leads are crap. And really what it comes down to, in just about every business, the sales leader is going to have a larger share of voice than the marketing leader. And so when the marketing team does not serve the sales team's needs effectively,
right,
the sales team is going to take the marketing team's budget. If you want to have an optimized organization, then this marketing team needs to take its cues in terms of creating these thought sequences to help enable sales. Hey, look, once you get your sales funnel completely optimized, all of that fun top of funnel education-based content, you can do all of that. And every lead you generate is going to be 50 times more valuable, because once you've generated the lead, it's automatically going to be pulled through your buying process until a salesperson says, that's a hot prospect. I can work this one. And then they knock it down and close it fast. And now the sales team is making more money. The marketing team is generating more ROI.
Yep.
And everyone wants to work together because the sales team feels the marketing team's value. And the marketing team is providing real value to their sales team.
Awesome. You said it very well. You dropped a word in there that I wasn't quite familiar with. Did you actually use the term automagically?
I did.
I was like, damn, automagically. Did you hear that? I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool word.
I love automation. I think that if you are very strategic about your content creation and the thought sequences that you're creating, and you approach the overall story arc that your content creates based on a copywriting framework, then you get to automate a large percentage of your sales process using nothing more than advertising, your website, and email automation. And when you get to that point, you get to spend more time doing fun stuff as a marketer, and your sales team's going to close more leads and make more money, and everyone's going to be happy.
Everybody's high-fiving angels.
Right.
Now, it's really interesting to me. If you want to know where to get started with your business and you want to put your business, your sales, and your marketing team on a really smart path of smarketing and start using some type of automagically sequenced information, I recommend starting with our topic selection worksheet, which will help you determine which pieces of content your business needs to generate ROI and to start doing it in a very smart and fast way. And you can get access to that downloadable free worksheet at wirebuzz.com/topics. That's wirebuzz.com/topics. Now, Marcus, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. A lot of really good information that we were able to share with our audience today, which is something we absolutely love to do. If this podcast was valuable to you, if it's making you a better marketer, we have just one simple request that actually has three dropdowns. And that one simple request is go on to iTunes, go on to Stitcher, and go on to Google Play, whichever device you have or service you use, and make sure you subscribe to our podcast. And while you're there, please leave a very honest rating and review. If you want to critique Marcus's new words that he's thrown out, leaving them in a review would be very, very valuable to me. And then we're going to do our job behind the scenes. We're going to continue to bring you the latest information because we want to be way ahead of the curve. We want to be 2-3 years ahead of where this industry is going. Ultimately, it always boils down to three letters, and it's ROI. You get it. We all get it. And as this podcast continues to go, we're going to be showing you how to use video, the most powerful tool on the internet, to help your business generate greater ROI at faster rates so you can be a video marketing master.